Welcome to the Ari Hoffman Show on Talk Radio 570 KVI, your home for the politically homeless. You want to be part of the show, you give us a call at 1-888-312-5757 or text us at 206-421-5757. Coming up today, Joe Biden's approval is still in the toilet, but his administration thinks they're doing an amazing job. We're also going to talk about the latest woke insanity from Disney. But before we get to any of that, time for your daily dose of adrenaline.
You want me to stick this into my heart? Are you f***ing nuts?
Over the weekend, we found out that the U.S. government shot down the Chinese spy balloon. Now, here on the show, we have exclusive audio for you of what it sounded like with the U.S. government ordering that F-35 Raptor to shoot down that spy balloon.
Begin laser ignition!
That's really high tech over there. I didn't know they had lasers on those suckers.
I heard a rumor. I don't know if this is true or not. Maybe you did hear if this is accurate information. Was it Captain Pete Mitchell who shot down the spy balloon?
No. He's busy taking out a nuclear reactor in Iran.
Okay.
Yeah, that's what's going on.
I guess
there.
What I heard was inaccurate.
No. But there was this other rumor, which has now been confirmed, that once the pilots got close enough, there was actually a message on the balloon. It said, "Dear Eric, happy Valentine's Day. Love, Fang Fang."
I saw that meme going around last week.
No, it's not that either.
Somebody jumped on that pretty quickly.
The other one I did like the most, it was meme-tastic this weekend, was the F-35 on the tarmac. And you know where they normally put the sketches, the outlines of the planes or flags of the countries they've shot down?
Oh, okay.
Right? It had a balloon.
A balloon.
Right there
on the front of the fuselage.
Right.
Under the
but
cockpit.
Let's be real about what actually happened. So, the Biden administration lets this thing complete its mission. Now, a few updated pieces of information. Originally, we were told this thing came from over the pole. It turns out, no. This thing went across Alaska, down the middle of Canada. So, nobody did anything about it in Alaska. Nobody did anything about it in Canada. That means Trudeau did nothing. And then, right into Montana. Then it heads out towards the Atlantic after we find out about this thing. Now, apparently, this thing was spotted by people on the ground, by people in passenger airliner jets, and they said, "Hey, U.S. government, we found something." They contacted the FAA, and the FAA said to them, heard this on Fox News this morning, the FAA said to them, "We're still crafting our response." I'm sorry, what? Still crafting a response? That's what you get when you have this random thing in the air? Oh, it did shut down air travel in certain areas for a while. But now a senior military official said Saturday that the Chinese spy balloon was shot down at 2:39 p.m. on Saturday by one air-to-air A-9X Sidewinder missile fired by an F-22 Raptor that took off from Langley Air Force Base in Virginia. The aircraft fired the missile at an altitude of 58,000 feet while the balloon was hovering an altitude of between 60,000 and 65,000 feet. The balloon was shot down about 6 nautical miles off the coast, off South Carolina, and the debris field is said to be roughly 7 miles wide. I have questions. Granted, I never served in the U.S. military, but I've seen a whole bunch of movies. So I have some questions. Number one, why do you blow this thing up with a missile? Don't you shoot a whole bunch of bullets at the balloon and then it falls in a straight line down and it's easier to recover? Question one. Question two. Why did the Biden administration let this thing traverse the entire country before doing anything about it? Do they have some kind of EMP weapon on the F-22 that can scramble the electronics of this sucker so it wasn't a threat? If so, who is controlling this thing? China was still operating this thing. Why'd you let it complete its mission, flying across the entire country? And also, if your goal was to recover it, to get intelligence off of it, why'd you blow it to smithereens? This looks to me, with the information we have right now, like an absolute cluster. I don't see the win here. I do love people like Ilhan Omar posting how excited they are that it got shot down. Are you kidding me? Give me a break. You hate this country. So then something else interesting happens. The Biden administration, because they can't take responsibility for anything, They pivot over to, well, this happens all the time during the Trump administration. And then the Trump administration pushes back. Now, what's even more fascinating about this is people from the Trump administration who hate Donald Trump, like John Bolton, he says that never happened. The question is, did our capabilities in detecting these suckers get better? Did the military not tell the Trump administration about it? Did nobody spot this thing? If the military thought this wasn't worth telling the president about, then we got a whole nother bunch of problems. Now, Fox News learned that at least one Chinese spy balloon flew over portions of Texas and Florida during the Trump administration, but they didn't seem to know about it. And that started this whole guessing game of, was the military keeping secrets from Donald Trump? Because you have Trump coming out very forcefully saying, it's not true, it's fake news, we didn't know anything about it. And then this weekend, Marco Rubio was doing an interview. And during his interview, I believe it was on MSNBC, they confront him with, oh, didn't you know this thing happened during the Trump administration? He's like, what are you talking about? Pete Buttigieg, oh my God. Every single time Pete Buttigieg shows up on TV, I go, that dude is borrowing his dad's suit for the day. That dude looks like he needs to grow into that thing. He just looks like a child playing dress up. He looks like me when I went to school one day dressed in my dad's best suit for an interview. That's right. That's what Pete Buttigieg looks like every single day. This was him this weekend trying to take a victory lap.
The military gauged the different risks and the different benefits of different approaches, made the decisions that they did, brought this thing down without incident.
Right, but the presumption has got to be that the Chinese were able to gather intelligence hovering over the United States for day after day, especially over some of these sensitive sites.
I'm sure there's a similar presumption about what spy satellites do. That is well outside of my lane. I'm just glad that nobody was hurt as this thing came down.
Wait a minute. They send this guy on to talk about the balloons, and he says this is well outside of my lane? Then what was that nonsense you were spewing 10 seconds ago, which was an obvious line, an obvious soundbite given to you by the administration? That's a Karine Jean-Pierre right there. Where I can't anticipate this question, where I have to go to the binder and find an answer. Of course you're going to be asked about the spy balloon. So a defense official on Saturday said Chinese spy balloons briefly traveled over the United States at least three times during the Trump administration. According to Fox News, Trump and a number of his top national security and defense officials refuted the claim, telling Fox News Digital it never happened. But on Sunday, a senior administration official told Fox News Digital that the U.S. intelligence, not the Biden administration, assesses that the People's Republic of China government surveillance balloons transited the continental U.S. briefly at least three times during the prior administration and once that we know of at the beginning of this administration, but never for this duration of time. The official told Fox News that this information was discovered after the Trump administration left office because these things went undetected. Oh, so first it goes to we're blaming the Trump administration because the same thing happened during their time to, oh, they didn't even know about it. The official explained that the Chinese surveillance balloons are part of a larger pattern. These balloons are all part of the People's Republic of China fleet of balloons developed to conduct surveillance operations, which have also violated the sovereignty of other countries. I got a question. So let's make sure I got this right. We got the spy balloons, but don't we have a spy balloon on every single person's cell phone that has TikTok? Isn't that what that whole thing does? It just spies on Americans? Then you have the People's Republic of China buying up land, farmland, next to military bases. This is all these guys do. And we're not doing anything about it. What, are we banning TikTok? No. Seems like some people are banning them from government devices, but God forbid our kids aren't able to do the dances on TikTok to the Weeknd song. Oh, we might have civil war on our hands. The youth of America uprise against their parents. Don't get rid of my TikTok. The official said over the past several years, Chinese spy balloons have been spotted over countries across five continents, including East Asia, South Asia, and Europe. They said, two things can be true at once. This happened and it wasn't detected. Well, now I'm kind of skeptical because you said they knew about it and didn't do anything about it. Now you're saying it happened and it wasn't detected. Which one's true? I do love that China, through all this, says, yep, it's ours, but It's a weather sensing equipment. That's right. It's just a routine training exercise, right? Yes, civilian. Has nothing whatsoever to do with spying. Yeah, all their companies work for the government. You think their civilian agencies don't too? Quote, the airship is from China. It is a civilian airship used for research, mainly meteorological purposes. Yeah, you really need to see what the weather's like in Montana. We need to check on the cows in Montana. There's so much gas coming up from those farting cows.
News headline, in Montana, this time of year, it's cold.
Right, exactly. Yeah, the farting cows are producing methane. We need to do something about it. AOC said so.
No, they're fans of Yellowstone. They want to see if they can pick up what's next for an episode. We got to wait till spring on it.
There we go.
They want to see what Rip Wheeler is up to at the ranch.
Am I the only one who doesn't watch that show? That's the Kevin Costner.
In this cluster this morning, yes, you are the only one.
Okay, just making sure. I understand. Okay, it's a demographic thing. I see. I'm with you on this. Anyway, you got China saying it's a civilian meteorological weather balloon. Nobody believes them. Nobody believes them at all. A senior U.S. defense official told Fox News that the balloon was launched from mainland China. The Pentagon does not believe that this was a weather balloon that flew off course. There was no force majeure that caused the Chinese surveillance balloon to enter U.S. airspace. You know what this reminds me of? There's literally an episode of The West Wing about this where the U.S. is spying on Russia. Literally spying on Russia. And they go, yeah, it's a weather sensing drone flying over studying coastal erosion. The Baltic Sea. Then the Russian premier goes, you really expect me to believe that? Come on, guys. Really? Just really? I mean, I'm looking at this whole thing. And what does it show? That America's weak. That America is weak. And the question is, what's China going to do next? Was this an attempt to see what Biden would do? How far can we push Biden? We've done a little bit before. Let's see how much more we can get away with now. Former Deputy Assistant Secretary of Defense for East Asia, Heino Klinik, told Fox News on Saturday that the CCP will accuse the United States of being provocative and taking kinetic action to remove this Chinese aircraft from American airspace. Yep, they did that. He said they'll claim it was all completely innocent, that it was a weather balloon. Check, check, check. They'll reiterate the statements they've made before, but in essence, this is the norm for them, they'll launch counter-accusations and deny they were wrong. Well, this dude is 100% right. That's exactly what they did. It may be aggressive, but they're not going to take physical action against their norm to try and shift blame. It is the norm for them to try and portray themselves as the innocent actor, abiding by international law and international standards of conduct, when in fact it's the exact opposite. Now, mind you, over the weekend I saw some posts on social media taken from Chinese state propaganda showing that's exactly what they did. But the question is, does this change anything? Does this mean we're going to be at war with Beijing soon? Is this the prelude to a whole bunch more of these balloons coming? Because apparently another one's on the way. China's all upset that we shot down their balloon. What are you sending into our space for? We've had incidents in the past where our spy planes were shot down over China. This is what you do. Stop acting so surprised. So, at this point, the question is, was this a test of whether or not Biden would do anything? Was this a test of whether or not America would do anything? Was this a test of whether or not we detected these things? One thing is for sure, that while all of us were watching this train wreck disaster, saying, why didn't you shoot it down? Why didn't you shoot it down? Why didn't you shoot it down? The Chinese are laughing at us and saying, I can't believe they didn't do anything about this. I can't believe that Joe Biden is just letting this thing fly all over the country and didn't do anything about it. Nothing at all. Tries to say, oh, I told him to shoot down on Wednesday. Then how come it wasn't shot down on Wednesday? Oh, they were worried about it crashing into something. Really? Over Montana? Okay, there'd be a little bit more ground beef, I understand. But come on, really? Truth is, Joe Biden is powerless to do anything. Our military, the people running our military, doesn't seem competent of making decisions, or they want to hide it, or they want to run their own country over there. Either way, this is not good for America. And the question is how much longer this insanity continues. Saw this over the weekend, and I literally started cracking up in my chair. Do you remember Elena Gonzalez, former Seattle City Council member?
Yeah, tried to run for mayor.
Yeah,
did not
tried
win.
To destroy our city in the process. You remember her? Yes. Very, very, very fun lady.
She's what we call laissez-faire when it comes to homelessness.
She's what we call lazy. Oh, I'm sorry. Oh, okay. I just meant that for with regards to anything. So M. Lorena Gonzalez Yolanda Veracruz La Jolla Cardinal put this up over the weekend. Today, a state lawmaker spelt S-P-E-L-T, my name Lorena, L-O-R-R-A-I-N-A, Gonzalez with an S instead of a Z. I guess he's never heard of me, hashtag Waleg. I'm sorry that the people in the Washington State Legislature haven't heard of you. To be fair, odds are you probably never heard of whoever that was in the Washington State Legislature beforehand.
Okay, yeah.
Unless, of course, you wanted their job or something. But who remembers the name? I'm a former council member whose only accomplishment seems to be allowing Antifa to burn Seattle, taking over six blocks of the city during an autonomous zone. Plus, what's with this biblical nonsense? Spelt? So we're going old biblical with all the different types of wheat, barley, rye, oats, and spelt?
Yeah, I hear spelt. That's what I was thinking.
So that's where I'm going with that. Spelt? Really? So, of course, she gets dragged for this because it's ridiculous, egotistical, and obnoxious. And then, you know what happened after this, right? She's pounding away on her keyboard going, I can't delete this thing or else they're going to think I'm a bigger idiot. So how do I save this? Ah, look, here's what I found. So she writes, Speltgate 2023. I'm here for it. I don't think it's a gate. Hang on. How many people actually like this? Wow, it's a gate. She had three retweets, four quote tweets, and 65 likes. Big numbers right there. Big numbers. Speltgate. Of course, this is the first time anybody's heard of her in, what, a year? So, never in a million years did I think that the use of a UK-based spelling, I don't believe that. I do not believe that. I believe she went to the Google machine and tried to save her you-know-what. Would fire up the right-wing factions of Twitter. Sadly hilarious. And then she writes all these different spellings of Lorena, hashtag grammar police. Oh, wait a minute. See, she doesn't like the police. That hasn't changed at all. Hashtag get a life. I just, come on. Really? Ugh. Can you just go away, find something else to do, make somebody else's life miserable like your husband instead of everybody here in Seattle or Washington? We got enough problems here already. Like this one here from Como News. A homicide investigation is underway after a man was killed Saturday morning in North Seattle. According to the Seattle Police Department, officers were flagged down on the 12000 block of Aurora Avenue North. Aurora? I hear that's an up-and-coming place up there in North Seattle. Quote, officers found a man in a parking lot with significant assaultive injuries who was clearly deceased. Well, that's a really complicated way of saying we found a dead guy. What are they talking about? Seattle Fire Department said the victim was about 35 years old, found dead upon arrival of medics. On Sunday, police said they arrested a 45-year-old man for the homicide. Many business owners and workers in the area were alarmed to hear what happened. Other businesses tell Como News that they saw about 10 police cars as they were getting to work Saturday morning. So they said in addition to the homicide, there have been other concerning incidents, including issues with the homeless. Quote, they open the gates, they steal pieces of the carts, they always drop garbage bags or shopping carts around here. Uh-huh. Now, they still haven't said how this guy died. Ready for this? This is horrifying. Quote, somebody poured gasoline on him, and he was burned on the side of his body and the arm. I mean, this is the new thing that they're doing to homeless people between each other. This is absolutely horrifying. Absolutely horrifying. And by the way, how do you know this was a homicide as opposed to this guy's generator exploded or this guy was pouring gas into a generator? How do you not know it wasn't one of those things? Because we know those RVs spontaneously combust all the time, right? Meanwhile, also according to Como News, a business in Seattle's Soto neighborhood has survived everything from world wars to the Great Depression, even multiple pandemics, but says it can't continue to stay open anymore due to the homeless crisis downtown. Tell me about it. Thea Sand, fifth-generation owner of Emmanuel's Rug and Upholstery Cleaner Soto, said she is closing her business and leaving Seattle due to the persistent health and safety issues from nearby encampments. Quote, we've just kind of had it. What's happening in Seattle, especially euphemistically termed by the city council, unhomed neighbors. Mm-hmm. She described the situation outside her business, saying they've had trucks stolen from their locked lot. Every Monday morning, they arrive to have graffiti and needles on the ground. She even arrived to a burning mattress on the parking lot one morning. Quote, our clients are nervous coming down here to drop off. Sand said someone in RV recently backed down the loading dock of her business, dumped raw sewage into a drain. She said she got the runaround from the catch basin and sewage pumping companies for cleanup, so she and her employees had to take matters into their own hands. Quote, so my employees and I basically put on rubber suits and gas masks, had a 5-gallon container of Clorox, and had to clean it ourselves. She said it was the final straw for the 116-year-old business. Quote, we've been able to struggle through a lot of things, but this last one is just unremitting and constant. We're just tired. We're just tired of dealing with it. It's time to relocate. You would think that when something like this happens, maybe the mayor would chime in, maybe from somebody from the Seattle City Council. But why are we surprised? I mean, my family business had been in Seattle for 110 years when we moved 3 years ago. Didn't hear one word from the city. The Puget Sound Business Journal did a little write-up on it. But aside from that, absolutely nothing. 110 years we were in the Georgetown neighborhood. And we moved out because it just got to be too much. We had the exact same problems. Coming in every day, not knowing what you're going to find in the parking lot. Not knowing if your business was going to be broken into. Not knowing if your trucks were going to be there. According to Como, Sand's decision to move out comes as a plan to create a designated lot for people living in RVs in Seattle has stalled while officials search for a property owner who is willing to host the program. You know, we spoke about this last week. These RV safe lot programs do not work. I have gone down to San Diego. I have seen them for myself. They do not work. But also, what landlord is insane enough to give up a parking lot, given the fact that that parking lot is probably next to a building which has their tenants in it? And if somebody has developable land, they know that the neighbors are going to go bonkers crazy the second they say they're renting it out to the city. On top of that, if they have a land that's about to be developed, that means they're working on getting it developed. And what if you can't get rid of the homeless people when you need to develop the property? Who would be dumb enough to rent one of these things to the city, especially for a failed program? The King County Regional Homeless Authority awarded a $1.9 million contract to the Low Income Housing Institute last summer with the goal of opening the RV lot as soon as possible. Yeah, because we know those tiny home villages run by Lehigh are working out oh so well. The program would allow between 35 and 40 RVs at home. By the way, residents who live near Genesee Park in South Seattle, remember, what was it, 4 years ago, they tried to surprise the neighborhood by putting one of these things in there? Oh, yeah, in the very same parking lot that's attached to the field where they have Seafair. And us neighbors found out about it, went bonkers crazy. Mark my words, if they cannot get somebody to rent them space, they will pick a parking lot near a park, near someplace where your kids play, to do this. Just watch. Just watch. I guarantee you it's going to happen. Seattle officials estimate there are 449 RV encampments in the city. In December 2022, 118 of those encampments are in the Sodo neighborhood. Why would anybody want to have their business down there anymore? Why? It's not safe. Of course these businesses are moving out. I don't know if you've been to the Georgetown Sodo area. You should see the vacancies. They're going through the roof. Meanwhile, it's no better in Green Lake. According to Como, Seattle community is in shock after a woman was, hang on, cover your kids' ears if you got them with you in the car. After a woman was reportedly groped and punched in their Green Lake area neighborhood, Seattle Police Department arrested a man they say attacked a woman near North 56th Street and Kirkwood Place North, then led police on a foot chase through a busy neighborhood. The victim did not want to talk on camera. Some people were in disbelief that a 25-year-old man reportedly assaulted a woman in a business around noon on Saturday by entering a restricted area. Seattle police say the woman fought him off and ran away. Then reports of a suspicious person helped officers arrest the suspect a mile away after a brief foot chase. One man says this incident is unusual for his longtime neighborhood. How long have you been living in Green Lake, sir? Have you looked around Green Lake recently? Have you not seen what those parks look like over there? Unusual? Really? The suspect was booked for burglary and indecent liberties, defined as sexual contact by forcible compulsion. Authorities discovered he had a warrant for a similar incident that also involved burglary and attempted indecent liberties. Wow. The fun never stops in Seattle. It just doesn't. This insanity continues. And what's the solution? I love how people say Mayor Bruce Harrell is doing a great job. No, he's not. Absolutely not. Do you see things getting better? So I don't usually drive into work, but I'm filling in for John, so I drive in early this morning, and I come in, and I'm driving down 4th Avenue, and the zombie apocalypse that's out there. Holy cow, I thought it was bad during the day when I drive in. Man, what a mess it is down there. No, things are not getting better. They're back to playing a game of whack-a-mole, but this is what happens when you elect somebody who is one of the people responsible for the city getting this bad. It's not going to get any better as long as Seattle keeps electing the same dummy heads. People, if you don't vote, you deserve every single thing you get. So the question is, the Biden administration keeps saying that he is doing such a great job. He's the greatest president of all time. He's created so many jobs. The economy is doing so well. Why does nobody else agree? This is Pete Buttigieg wearing his father's suit on Meet the Press this weekend.
He's got a lot of things to tell. Why do you think that it has not penetrated the American public?
Well, look, these things don't sell themselves, and it's one of the reasons I'm really looking forward to that State of the Union address. I will say that there have been so many accomplishments under this administration, it can be difficult to list them in a distilled way.
I'm sorry, wait, I got a second one. I just want to make sure I got this right. There have been so many accomplishments, we can't even list them. Mm-hmm. Yeah. If anybody out there believes that, I've got a bridge running over Lake Washington that I'll sell you. In fact, if you act now, I'll throw in a second one absolutely free. You get a 2-for-1 deal of those bridges running over Lake Washington. Are you kidding me? By the way, nobody believes this nonsense. So let's go over to our friends over at NBC. See what they say about Joe Biden's approval ratings.
When President Biden addresses the nation on Tuesday night, he will be speaking to a skeptical public. Despite the low unemployment rate, a stronger than expected midterm performance for his political party, and a string of legislative accomplishments, the president's job rating sits at just 45%. His poll numbers are even lower on his handling of the economy, foreign policy, and specifically the war in Ukraine. 2/3 of voters have reservations or are very uncomfortable with the idea of Biden running for a second term.
Hang on a second. That can't be right. Hang on. Let me go to my little black book of the right-wing media conspiracy. Let's see. I have Newsmax here. I've got Daily Wire, Daily Caller, Fox News. I do not have NBC. I certainly don't have Chuck Todd in there. All right. You know what? That's just one. No way that's right. Let's head on over to our friends over at CBS. Definitely in my little red book of Mao's media conspiracy.
6 in 10 Americans believe the economy's condition is bad. Pessimism that has been in place over the last year. Among all America's challenges, our poll says the top priority, lowering inflation. 3 in 4 people said they worry about it the most.
I think you never fully stop holding your breath when you see prices going up.
Over the next year, our poll shows roughly 6 in 10 Americans expect the economy to be in recession or slowing. Many everyday Americans are sweating this economy. Instability generates insecurity.
I feel like it's kind of falling apart. Kind of, we need to rebuild it up. I don't know what the exact answer is.
Wait a second. CBS and NBC are both admitting that Joe Biden is doing a really, really bad job, or at least quoting other people so they don't have to say it themselves. When the price of eggs is $10 a dozen, you got problems. Oh, yeah. It was sky high because of all them chickens dying off. When you got all these problems with the gas prices and people have to spend more to fill up their cars, it doesn't matter if it's down a buck, whatever, from its record high. It's still ridiculously high.
$10 for eggs. Was that New York?
Dude, it was all over the place.
Is that on Manhattan?
It was all over the place. It wasn't just in New York. It's freaking crazy. It's absolutely nuts that you're paying that much. Combine the problems with the supply shortage. Yes, we're still having supply shortage issues. Wait a minute. Isn't Pete Buttigieg in charge of that? You know what? Not everybody in the left-wing media could be reporting this, right? Right? Let's check with old reliable ABC. What are they saying about this?
And our new poll this morning with the Washington Post shows significant warning signs for Democrats. More than half of the country disapproves of Biden's job performance, weighed down by significant discontent over the economy. 40% say they are worse off financially than they were 2 years ago. The most negative response to that question in nearly 40 years of our polling. falling. And as Biden prepares for a likely 2024 reelection campaign, less than a third of Democratic voters want to see him renominated.
I have a real question, though. These numbers haven't changed much since the midterm elections. Do you think this is going to have anything to do with the electorate? Because what I'm worried about is heading into 2024, with all of this still being just as bad, because I don't see it changing anytime soon, aren't people going to do the same thing they do with Congress all the time? Congress always has an approval rating down in the 20s or the teens. And then when it comes to re-election time, they go, well, we like our Congress. We hate Congress, but we like our congressperson. So do you think the exact same thing is going to happen with Joe Biden? I mean, when ABC, NBC, and CBS are saying the same thing as Fox, there's a real issue going on here.
166 million Americans are living paycheck to paycheck. The majority of people who are making more than $100,000 a year say that includes them, living paycheck to paycheck. Retail spending's been down in several recent months, and inventory's up. Inflation has outpaced wage growth for 21 months, and gas prices are up again the last 5 weeks in a row.
Phil, you've been tracking this since the beginning of the new year, where we've been looking at the gas prices. Because remember, the Washington Policy Center and other people on our side of the aisle were predicting that the gas prices were going to go up. I know they are going up near my house because they were down nearing $4 a gallon. Now they're back up around $4.49. What are they near you?
I think 447 was one of the last prices I remember seeing here over the weekend.
447.
Yeah.
So it's about right. It's comparable to where we're at. So they went back up. And mind you, they're going down in the rest of the country. The taxes we're having here are put in place by Jay Inslee and the local Democrats, and our gas prices are going back up.
And I've seen some indications that they're going up in other parts of the country, too.
Yeah.
So.
Well, they are, but here's the thing. They're not getting the same attention. Here, they're going up by a much, much larger amount. I mean, you're talking about, what, almost 50 cents a gallon in some places? I want to talk to Todd Myers from the Washington Policy Center. I know he's been tracking this kind of stuff. And yet, with all this bad inflation, you're talking 40-year record highs inflation. You're talking the return of the Jimmy Carter years. Wonder what Joe Biden has to say about all this.
Do you take any blame for inflation, Mr. President?
I take any blame for inflation? No.
Why not?
Because it was already there when I got here, man. Remember what the economy was like when I got here? Jobs were hemorrhaging. Inflation was rising. We weren't manufacturing a damn thing here. We were in real economic difficulty. That's why I don't. Thank you.
None of that is true. Inflation was 1.4% when Joe Biden took office. You want the actual statistics? There's the actual statistics. Why did we not have as many jobs? Because the Democrats shut down the entire country in response to the coronavirus pandemic. Florida wasn't having these problems. Manufacturing, people like Patty Murray shut down manufacturing plants here in the U.S. because they said they were bad for the climate. And now they're spending tons of your money trying to bring these jobs back to the U.S. after they exported them overseas. Because apparently, the way you stop global warming is to just not pollute here, but it's okay to pollute in other parts of the world. And this is just nuts. Absolutely nuts that these people are so tone deaf. Truth is, Joe Biden probably doesn't know. He just listens to whatever his advisors tell him. Joe Biden said he wanted to shoot down the Chinese spy balloon, and yet seemed to be fine coasting over the country all week. So then Joe Biden tries to take a victory lap after he shoots it down after it completes its mission, crossing across the entire country.
Briefed on the balloon. I ordered the Pentagon to shoot it down on Wednesday as soon as possible. They decided, without doing damage to anyone on the ground, they decided that the best time to do that was as it got over water outside within 12-mile limit. It successfully took it down, and I want to compliment our aviators who did it, and we'll have more to report on this a little later. Thank you.
Mr. President, what did you say about China? What's the message to China?
You were saying the recommendation was from your national security.
I told them to shoot it down.
On Wednesday?
On Wednesday.
But the recommendation
they said to me, let's wait till the safest place to do it.
What does this mean for China, in relation to China?
Yeah, so basically they had these meetings that were planned with China, these negotiations, and they didn't want to jeopardize the meetings, so they didn't shoot down the balloon. You know who's always good for a hot take on this kind of stuff? Cory Booker. That guy's always got his eyes wide open to what's going on in the world. Let's ask him what he thinks about all this stuff with China.
Due to national security concerns, Congress had banned TikTok, for example, the social media app on federal devices. Your home state of New Jersey has also put restrictions in place, but you still use it personally. Does that mean that you think it's too late to go ahead and ban this? It's already on 200 million American devices. Is it just so integrated that espionage is something we have to live with?
No, absolutely not. And I think there's two ways to approach this. One, the proactive step of banning it on government devices is something that the United States federal government's doing, states and even localities are doing. But the other way to go about this is going directly to the company. They are now working with U.S. intelligence folks to try to make sure that the proper precautions are taken so the Chinese cannot get access and use it for spying.
So we're going to negotiate with the Chinese company so that China's Communist Party doesn't have access to the Chinese app. You know, I think Cory Booker wants to take me up on that bridge sale offer I had at the beginning of this segment, right? Two for one deal. They're running right over Lake Washington. They're floating. They're gorgeous. They're absolutely beautiful. Speaking of crazy stuff, by the way, just when you think it can't get any more insane, something like this comes along. This was put on Disney Plus. This is one of their shows, I believe, called The Proud Family. It's a kid's cartoon. Give a listen to this fun.
This country was built on slavery, which means
slaves built this country.
Tilled this land from sea to sea to sea. First there was rice, tobacco, sugar cane.
Then Whitney did his thing and cotton became king.
And we were its soldiers,
4 million strong.
Fighting for America's freedoms, even though we remained America's
slaves.
Built this country, the descendants of slaves continue to
slaves built this country.
And we, the descendants of slaves in America, have earned reparations for their suffering. And continue to earn reparations every moment we spend submerged in the systemic prejudice, racism, and
white supremacy
that America was founded with and still has not atoned for.
Slaves built this country.
Not only field hands, but carpenters, masons, blacksmiths, musicians,
inventors built cities from Jamestown to New Orleans, Savannah,
Washington.
40 acres and a mule.
We'll take the 40 acres, keep the mule.
We made your families rich.
From the southern plantation heirs
to the northern bankers
to the New England ship owners,
the founding fathers,
former presidents,
current senators,
the Illuminati, the New World Order.
Slaves built this country.
We had Tubman,
Turner,
Frederick D.
Then they say Lincoln freed the slaves.
But slaves were men
and women,
and only we can free ourselves.
Emancipation is not freedom.
Jim Crow, segregation, redlining, public schools feeding private prisons, where we become slaves again.
As we celebrate Juneteenth
for the umpteenth time,
our account is still outstanding.
Cause this country was built on slavery, which means
slaves built this country.
And we demand our 40 acres and a mule.
Want that?
You can keep the mule.
Keep the 40.
We're taking our freedom.
That's a kid's cartoon. That is a children's cartoon on Disney Plus. Now, I have older kids, and they're busy watching Star Wars on Disney Plus, or they're watching The Avengers, sure, or whatever, yeah, else it is. But if I had little kids, no way in hell would I ever let them do this. Let's see what we were accused of, us white folk, here in this thing. Let's see. First of all, they completely got rid of Native Americans in this revisionist history, okay, right? Completely got rid of that. Second of all, Lincoln didn't free the slaves?
I think that's how it was characterized, yes.
Yeah, that's sure what it seems like to me. The Illuminati?
Yeah, I wasn't sure why they wanted to go down that rabbit hole.
What conspiracy? Oh, the Freemasons. Let's get Benjamin Franklin Gates out here to find the buried treasure underneath a church in Manhattan. Yeah. Systemic racism, white supremacy?
Yeah.
What is this garbage?
I was thinking this is kind of the 21st century woke version of Schoolhouse Rock. I mean, it's in animated form. It's not necessarily to a song, but you can feel how they're trying to zip through all of this history. And then part of the production element is visual at the very end.
Mm-hmm.
You've got all these young characters in cartoon that are performing, and then the cut shot at the end when they finish is essentially like an audience and then some judges, almost like it's a talent show,
yeah,
sort of a thing. And the judges are all sitting there wide-eyed and stunned at what they've heard from these young people, ostensibly that these young people are this woke or this deep into politics and history. And so that's how this whole thing concludes, with the shocked adults hearing what the kids have just recounted for them.
Well, there's also a bunch of kids giving the Black Power symbol with that fist up in the air. And the cartoon even has the hands up, don't shoot gesture. The thing that was debunked after the Michael Brown shooting in Ferguson, Missouri. Remember that whole thing was BS? Mm-hmm. That's in there, too. So you look at places like the Daily Wire, who are producing kids' content, and you go, this is why we need it. Now, remember, everybody said, oh, it's such a good thing we got rid of that Disney CEO because he's too woke, and we brought back Bob Iger. Bob Iger is the one who started this woke insanity. If you think things are getting better, they're not going to. He's one of the guys who ruined Star Wars. He's involved in that whole thing. So why does anybody think it's going to get better?
And is this just one of some Disney Plus subscription video shorts, or is this part of a bigger production? That part I didn't understand.
So it's part of a show. It's an episode of a show.
Okay.
So they include
it.
It's woven into stuff. That's the thing that people don't understand. And really, you're not going to see this unless somebody's kid happens to be watching it. A parent happens to hear it over their shoulder.
Sure. And I'm going to venture to guess that Disney will find out in relatively short order if this series gets a lot of clicks or does not get a lot of clicks. And doesn't get a lot of views or does get a lot of views, and they'll just decide, oh, all right, well, we tried it. It wasn't very popular with our customers, and we're going to move on to different content rather than trying to replicate this.
They don't care about popularity. What they care about is pushing the message in the kids. I was thrilled to see that somebody dug this up, an old Morgan Freeman interview, which kind of brought things back to center as opposed to the extremes. Give a listen.
Black History Month, you find
ridiculous.
Why?
You're going to relegate my history to a month?
Oh, come on.
What do you do with yours? Which month is White History Month? Come on. Tell me.
Well, I'm Jewish.
Okay. Which month is Jewish History Month?
There isn't one.
Oh. Why not?
Yeah.
You want one?
No.
No. I don't either. I don't want a Black History Month. Black history is American history.
How are we going to get rid of racism?
Stop talking about it. I'm going to stop calling you a white man.
Yeah.
And I'm going to ask you to stop calling me a black man. I know you as Mike Wallace. You know me as Morgan Freeman.
I love that man. That was a great 60 Minutes interview. That was fantastic because he's 100% right.
How many bumper stickers over the years? I want Morgan Freeman to narrate my life.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So this was a 60 Minutes interview with Mike Wallace and Morgan Freeman, what, early 2000s?
Yeah, this is almost
something
20
like
years ago or something.
Yeah.
And this thing's out there, and he's 100% right. And when he says, oh, do you want Jewish History Month? No! Of course I don't want Jewish History Month. It's part of the American experience. The whole American experience is, here's our melting pot. This is what the Irish brought. This is what the Asians brought. This is what the Jews brought. This is what the blacks brought. It's all part of the same historical experience. So why do they always try to minimize everybody? And of course, by continuously talking about race, you only make things worse. Time for a story you're not going to hear anywhere else.
Talk Radio 570 KVI, an Ari Hoffman Show exclusive.
There's a story that Jonathan Cho from the Discovery Institute and I have been working on. We touched on it on Friday, where there's this Red Lion Hotel in Federal Way. And this was supposed to be one of our homeless hotels in the region from King County and the King County Regional Homeless Authority. But there seems to be a never-ending series of problems plaguing this hotel, and we didn't realize how far the rot went. In fact, Federal Way Council members and Federal Way Mayor didn't realize how bad the problems were, because it appears that King County was lying to all of us. Joining us now on the KVI studio line, the mayor of Federal Way, Jim Farrell. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Thanks, Ari. Thanks for having me. Good morning.
Such a pleasure. Good morning to you. So let's go back to the very, very beginning. In 2021, King County buys this hotel for almost $9 million, and they're working in partnership with Federal Way because you guys have a homeless problem, and you guys were on board with this, right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, it's a perfect location. In fact, actually, I'm looking at it right now. I'm literally across the street from that location right now. Having breakfast with some friends, and what I can tell you is, yeah, that was perfect location. I'm, you know, backing up on I-5 right there by a Walmart super Walmart parking lot. It's just a perfect location to have something like this, and we were hopeful that we could have a place to get our homeless population, our unsheltered population, out of the elements when it got super cold.
Okay, so as I understand it, I saw a copy of the inspection report. The inspection report does not mention meth in any way, shape, or form, as far as I can tell. But then this thing gets delayed, and it's still not open almost 2 years after it's been purchased. What was King County telling you?
Well, you know, we've got a human services manager, and I, you know, first of all, I never heard directly from King County about what the problem was. And one of the things I would do is say to my, you know, human services manager, find out what the status of the Red Lion is. Where are we at? And we just kept getting delays and delays. We finally start hearing rumors that there was methamphetamine contamination at that location and that they were having a problem with their contractor. But we never heard that directly from King County.
No, King County didn't tell you anything about this. Here's how we found out about it. So what happened was a few weeks ago, I had you on the show. We had you on the show to talk about the Stevenson Hotel, which had been rented out so that you could deal with this problem because the Red Lion's not available. And it was before you guys had told the community because it wasn't technically fully approved yet by Federal Way. It had to get the approval. Then it goes to public comment. And that's where we started looking at this. But then we want to know why the Red Lion wasn't done. And I'm still trying to figure out how they have these high levels of methamphetamine, so high that the fire department was told to use caution when going there, and yet they didn't tell you guys. And also, if it wasn't on the inspection report, where'd it come from?
Great question. Actually, we found out through Jonathan Cho's reporting and investigation that about this notification to the fire department. So, yeah, it was significant enough to tell them, and thank goodness they did, but we just haven't heard any of this. And so what we have been told was that there was some sort of, not from them, but through other sources, is that there's some sort of remediation, but it went sideways, and now the whole project is essentially high-centered, and that's where we believe the King County needed to pivot and look at other locations.
So I'm just going through the excuses that Chase Gallagher from King County has given me and Jonathan Cho. He has said, well, it's been delayed. He has said it's been delayed due to a water main break in the winter. He says now that it's been delayed to low levels of meth. Then we found this other email that shows that, in fact, it's high levels of methamphetamine. Then we find out there's a pending lawsuit between King County and whoever did the remediation because they damaged the building so badly. I got to tell you, Mayor, I don't know what to believe at this point from the county.
Well, yeah, I don't know what's going on at that level. The key thing is that we really needed to find an emergency location where people didn't freeze to death out in the elements. So that's why we had to do our own workaround, not even counting the Stevenson. We had to do our own workaround with, thank goodness we've got an organization like Fusion here in town that literally saved lives when we got that early cold spell in November and December.
Gotcha. So you're looking at something like this. You're looking at it from the correct perspective of we need to save lives. We need to get people inside. Are you also looking at drug treatment options? Because we know that 80% of the people out there on the streets, this whole thing is being fueled by a drug crisis.
Yeah. One of the things is that when the legislature passed House Bill 1220, it said, hey, if you've got any zoning in which hotels are allowed, you have to allow this kind of either emergency shelter or transitional housing. So what we did and what the council, we've got a great council, and the council passed at my request two things that are really going to help with this type of housing is, number one, notice to the public that it's on its way and, you know, before it happens. And number two, licensing, which requires that no drugs no drugs can be used or sold on the property. And we could pull the license if we find any of that going on. The treatment's a different issue, but the key thing is what we want to make sure is that we've got control over a situation in which drugs are being used or sold at a particular location.
Now, the question I have is, King County has already threatened to withhold money from anybody who doesn't give them permits. So if you guys pulled the permit over drug use, are they going to pull your funding?
You know what? I've never heard anybody threatening us with funding. I saw that in some of the reporting, and I haven't heard that. And frankly, listen, you know, I'm a former prosecutor of 19 years, as you know, Ari. If people are using drugs or selling drugs, I don't care what anybody says. We're going to pull a permit if we can't get it corrected.
Gotcha. Because it seems like these officials are now bringing out the big guns, because it seems to me the same thing happens time and time again. There's a hotel that's purchased. The neighbors don't know about it. There's a big uproar. The thing opens anyway. And so we go. And that's the only thing that really explains it.
Yeah. You know, I can't speak to that. What I can say is that we went above and beyond. Once we saw House Bill 1220 pass, we made sure that we're going to have some local control, and we're not going to allow something to slide into chaos. We're just not going to allow that. Gotcha. And if it happens, we'll shut it down.
In the last few minutes we have with Federal AM Mayor Jim Farrell. So SeaTac has said no more homeless shelters, hotels, anything like that, until all this kind of stuff has been worked out. Is that anything that Federal Way is considering?
Well, you know, since we passed our that ordinance I was telling you about here in Federal Way, I think this is the first time we've gone through this process. So right now, the Stevenson's only 22 rooms. And then there's that whole health through housing thing, which we haven't even received a permit request. So I really don't see a whole bunch of these happening. I think, you know, the King County Homelessness Authority and King County, I don't think they've got other plans, you know, so I don't think we need to put any kind of hold on it. It's just not happening anyway. But I'll tell you, Ari, what I just mentioned is where I think the real kink in the hose, as I say, is this communication or the lack thereof. Because you've got the Homelessness Authority, which I never supported, and the King County government. And it's just this, you know, who's in charge? Whose project is it? Who do you communicate with? And I think that is causing a lot of, it's just a bureaucratic mess. And we've never, I don't think I've ever really heard directly from King County Housing Authority about what their plans are.
Well, I appreciate you coming on and talking with us. I kind of wish the people from King County would, because I put out numerous requests to Dale Constantine's office and the King County Regional Homeless Authority, and they don't seem like actually talking about this kind of stuff. But if they're listening this morning, they have an open invitation. They can contact me. They know the email address just as well as you do, ari@kvi.com. Mayor Farrell, thank you so much for being with us today and discussing this very, very important issue. We really do appreciate it.
Thanks, Ari. I'm on my way to Olympia this morning to testify to try to make drugs illegal again on Senate Bill 5536 is getting a hearing, along with, I think it's 5547, to try to, you know, bring, you know, some clarity and some sanity to the drug laws in our state. So,
you know,
happens this morning.
I saw your testimony last time, and you did a great job. If you could do me a favor and just mention to your office to send me the clips of your testimony again, we'd love to play them on air.
Will do. Thanks, Ari. Appreciate it.
Great talking with you. Appreciate it. You can also find that over on TEW. You can watch it all over there. I'll also tell you something else. I mean, these laws, the stuff that's going on here in Washington State, it just gets crazier and crazier and crazier. But this is a little ray of sunshine. So we've been covering pretty hard on this station this insanity about how Jay Inslee, Bob Ferguson, and crew want to release the sex offenders from McNeil Island, the level 3 sex offenders, who are the most likely to reoffend. In fact, we've actually done some advertising for this just to let you know about it.
Washington State's McNeil Island is a beautiful long vacation destination for level 3 sex offenders. Now, Jay Inslee, Bob Ferguson, and Washington Democrats are bringing the experience to your neighborhood. Department of Corrections Tours is sending the offenders to beautiful halfway houses with no guards and no security on sprawling properties in rural residential areas. Who needs safety when you can feel good about yourself with virtue signaling? If you're asking yourself, how can I be part of the fun? Chances are you are already. No one is informing the neighbors. So look out your window and find out if you've been selected as one of the lucky recipients of a level 3 sex offender in your neighborhood. This message, unfortunately, not sponsored by the Department of Corrections and the Department of Social and Health Services. May the odds ever be in your favor.
Now, all kidding aside, some communities are getting clever about how to stop this. According to Como News, a Thurston County community celebrated a brand new park with a ribbon cutting Saturday because they decided it was best to put this thing here. Why? Because you can't have sex offenders living within close proximity to parks.
Yeah, they put up a playground, essentially.
Exactly. You know? So if they build
solve the playground, then you can't open the halfway house for the sex offenders.
Exactly. They got the jungle gym out there and those sorts of things.
It's absolutely brilliant.
To make a playground close enough to this property that it would be disqualified for housing sex offenders.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And they keep opening these things in rural areas. So I say, neighbors, you want to stop these things? This is a absolutely brilliant, brilliant act of civil, not disobedience. That's not the right word, because they're actually building up their community and helping out and such and making things better. So I'm not going to call it civil disobedience, but it's absolutely brilliant. In fact, there's a meeting going on in Edumclaw this Tuesday night about the one that's already open in their neighborhood. And once again, nobody told them about it. They found out the very, very hard way. Here's a crazy story for you, absolutely insane, that involves the U.S. Coast Guard, a dead fish, and the Goonies house in Astoria, Oregon. Yep, can't make this up.
Hey, you guys!
A man was saved during a dramatic rescue by the Coast Guard at the mouth of the Columbia River on Friday, and was wanted by authorities for leaving a dead fish at a home in Astoria, Oregon, that was featured in the classic 1985 film The Goonies. As you know, we've been talking about The Goonies for a long time here on the show. We've been talking about The Goonies house, how people were like, who's going to buy this thing? What's going to happen to it? Is it going to become a tourist attraction? Well, The Goonies house was recently purchased by Bayman Zachary for $1.65 million. In December. He had previously said he will welcome fans of the film to come see the 126-year-old home. 37-year-old Kansas City entrepreneur is a fan of the family-friendly movie and has claimed to have seen it over 100 times. According to Astoria Police Chief Stacy Kelly, law enforcement has been searching for Jericho Labonte, 35, of Victoria, British Columbia, since Wednesday, when he posted a video on social media of himself leaving a dead fish at the Goonies house and then dancing around the property. I do not think he was doing the truffle shuffle, but the owner of the house did post these pictures that he's trying to build that contraption that allowed Chunk to enter the house if he did the truffle shuffle. Kelly said, quote, and this is the best part, "It's been a really odd 48 hours. Yeah, you think? Listen to the story. Kelly told the media that Labonte is wanted in British Columbia on criminal harassment, mischief, and failure to comply in cases from last year. Petty Officer Michael Clark said the Coast Guard received a mayday call at approximately 10 a.m. Friday while conducting trainings nearby. The mayday had no location information or the specific problem, but the agency was able to triangulate the boat's location and found the vessel taking on water in 20-foot seas. Now, the video from this is absolutely nuts. You can see it over at the United States Coast Guard Pacific Northwest account. You see these massive waves and this boat, this yacht, being knocked around by them. You see a Coast Guard boat trying to get close to it, and it can't because the waves are so nuts. The PC Sandpiper yacht was located at the mouth of the Columbia, the largest North American river flowing into the Pacific Ocean, and is known as the graveyard of the Pacific for its rough water. The Coast Guard shared dramatic video of a rescue made Friday morning showing rookie rescue swimmer Petty Officer First Class Branch Walton of Greenville, South Carolina, being lowered by a cable from a helicopter and swimming to the yacht that was struggling to stay afloat. Now, suddenly, what happens is, as the swimmer is approaching the boat, all of a sudden, this huge wave comes. You can watch the video. It's insane. It's like something out of Baywatch. This huge wave comes, slams into the boat, capsizing the boat. You can't see the rescue swimmer, but apparently, in the process, it throws the guy in the boat into the water. But apparently that guy, we found out later, was Labonte, the guy who was wanted for leaving the dead fish and other crimes from British Columbia. Now, the rescue swimmer was interviewed later and said now that the guy was in the water, it was actually pretty easy to get to him. He said the boat was destroyed. This is like right out of that Kevin Costner and Ashton Kutcher movie, The Guardian, with the rescue swimmer. I really liked that one. I know a lot of other people didn't. I thought it was very, very good. Anyway, Walton was able to rescue Labonte, and he was flown to the Coast Guard base in Astoria, where medics treated him for mild hypothermia and transported him to the hospital.
Walton said, quote, I kind of got thrown around a little bit by the wave. When I came up, I noticed the boat was pretty much in shambles. You could see all this in the video. Kelly said that the yacht's owner, who lives in nearby Warrenton, Oregon, reported the vessel stolen later Friday. But the hospital had already released Labonte. Now, here's something else. After the rescue and after the guy was taken care of, the U.S. Coast Guard posted the images up on social media. Somebody happened to see them and go, wait a minute, that's the dude from the video of the Goonies house of the guy who left the dead fish on the front porch. After the video, Labonte posted of leaving the fish at the house began circulating on social media. A person reported having taken Labonte fishing earlier in the day. According to NBC, he was taken into custody in the northwestern Oregon resort town of Seaside at a quote-unquote warming shelter. So, wait a minute. You're telling me that this guy was found in a homeless shelter in Seaside, Oregon? Number one, I didn't know they had homeless shelters in Seaside, Oregon. It's like a vacation town. So, okay, fine. Aha. Another one of our unsheltered neighbors, perhaps? This story is just too insane. Now, we do have exclusive audio of Labonte being interviewed by authorities after he was taken into custody about what he did.
Hey, kid, I want you to spill your guts. Tell us everything.
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 Okay, I'll talk. In third grade, I cheated on my history exam. In fourth grade, I stole my Uncle Max's toupee and I glued it on my face when I played Moses in my Hebrew school play. In fifth grade, I knocked my sister 80 down the stairs and I blamed it on the My mom sent me to a summer camp for fat kids. And then once during lunch, I got nuts and I peeked out and they kicked me out. But the worst thing I ever done, I mixed up all this fake puke at home, and then I went to this movie theater, hid the puke in my jacket, climbed up to the balcony, and then I made a noise like this. And then I dumped it over the side on all the people in the audience. Then this was horrible. All the people started getting sick and throwing up all over each other. I never felt so bad in my entire life.
Mom, they're going to like this kid, Mom.
Hit puree.
No, I do you.
Anyway, yes, that's when they started torturing him. Get the full confession out of him by sticking his hand in a blender. No, wait, maybe that didn't happen. No, not really. Anyway, I found that story entertaining because we've been following this insanity with the Goody's house, and this is just another level of it. I also did reach out to this guy, Bayman Zachary, and hopefully we're going to have him on the show later this week. I was talking to him via Instagram. Very responsive fellow for the fact that the whole universe wants to talk to him about a movie that's what, like 30, 40 years old at this point? I mean, amazing. It just shows how good that movie was. It really, really was. Because it had great speeches like this one in it.
Don't you realize? The next time you see Sky, it'll be over another town. The next time you take a test, it'll be in some other school. Our parents, they want the best of stuff for us. But right now they gotta do what's right for them. Cause it's their time. Their time. Up there. Down here, it's our time. It's our time down here.
Well, that was exciting. Anyway, I do love the Goonies movie. I absolutely do. And in fact, last night while I'm researching this and looking at all this, of course, what do I start playing in the background? Yep, I'm playing the Goonies 100% because it's awesome. Do love that
show. You
know,
you made a comment last hour. You're not a fan of Yellowstone like the only one. I'm guilty. I've never seen the Goonies.
I've never seen it.
And I've driven by the house. I go to Cannon Beach all the time, swinging by. Go right over there and see it.
I've never seen it front to back, but I've seen so many bits and pieces of it.
On TV. I refuse to work under these conditions with the two of you in there.
We have our first protest of the
this
day.
This is no good.
But you give me motivation now. I mean, if a guy's willing to go in 20-foot swells and get sick and steal a boat and blames it on the Goonies and we got a new owner who's going to open up for tours. All right, you got my interest there, Mr. Ari.
Mark Christopher, here's what you got to do, okay?
okay, here's what you got to do. Number one, you need to watch this movie and realize all the famous people that are in it.
Yeah.
You got the Steven Spielberg
childhood actor cast.
Right.
Yes.
You will look at this and go, I know all these people. And if you don't know them, you're like, wait, I recognize that person from
Thanos.
Somewhere.
Thanos
is in it. That's right.
From the Marvel comic universe. Yes.
Exactly right. Well, we took him down. Anyway. That story is absolutely insane. It was all over social media this weekend. I can't wait to get the first hound account.
And what a story for the rescue swimmer. Mm-hmm. I believe he just finished official training, and this was his first time out as a professional diver for the United States Coast Guard. Way to go, Coast Guard. I think he passed the audition.
Absolutely, and I tell you guys, you got to go check out the video over on the U.S. Coast Guard's social media account. It's the one for the Pacific Northwest. Make sure you check it out. One of the things that I really do appreciate, I try to call it out as much as possible, is when somebody who disagrees with me comes on the show. Because unfortunately, in our normal political discourse, now it's become the new normal that you just ignore the other side. And I think that's unfortunate. Plus, my friends from the other side of the aisle may be waking up to the fact that if they come on my show and they have these conversations with me, I'm a lot nicer to them in print. I'm a lot nicer to them on air and things like that because I feel bad trashing anybody who I actually know. Our next guest, I actually happened to be sitting with at a recent event where we were discussing all the homeless issues in Seattle, all the drug issues in Seattle. Had no idea I was sitting next to her. I don't know if she knew she was sitting next to me. I walked in late, sat down. It turns out we were sitting at the exact same table, and I feel really bad that I didn't get a chance to talk to her there. Joining us now on the KVI studio line, Representative Lauren Davis from Washington's 32nd Legislative District. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Thanks for having me, Ari.
Such an absolute pleasure. By the way, got to formally apologize. Had no idea you were even at the table. I was gabbing with a friend of mine, didn't even introduce myself. That's very rude and very unlike me, so I apologize for that.
No problem. I actually like it when I can blend in. The only reason I know who you were is because you had I think embroidered kippah that had your show on it. So I think that was a little bit of a tell.
It does stand out a little bit. Okay. Well, I think you and I disagree on drug policy. I think we disagree on that. You seem to support a lot of things that are decriminalization, and I seem to support a lot of things that are more law enforcement. Why don't you tell me why you have the position you do, where that comes from?
Sure. And the first thing I'll say just for the benefit of listeners, I support decriminalization, but I vehemently oppose legalization. And those are two, you know, very distinct concepts. I'm happy to talk about that if you'd like. But so the reason I support decriminalization just for the crime of drug possession specifically is primarily because it doesn't work. So, for instance, of the 9,000 individuals who were arrested for what's called a VUCSA, violation of the Uniform Controlled Substances Act, in the 2019, so shortly before Blake, of those individuals, only 3% of those folks ended up in drug court. So I think there's this perception that things were working quite well using the criminal legal system as a quote-unquote stick prior to the Blake decision, and that actually was not true. I am in public office largely to work on behavioral health issues and issues of addiction recovery. It's my passion, and it's, you know, personal experiences with loved ones that drove me to this work. So I'm deeply interested in things that work, and so the reason that I generally don't support that carceral response is because it's been largely ineffective. That being said, I have a fairly nuanced perspective. So I am absolutely fine with using the carceral system, even, you know, essentially as a coercive tool when it comes to crimes against persons or property that are committed, you know, ostensibly because of an underlying substance use disorder. And so I have no issue with accountability in that sense. But the crime of drug possession, there is one victim in that crime, and that is the person who is using the substances, but there's really no damage or danger to persons or property. And so I quibble with the idea of essentially criminalizing a person for exhibiting symptoms of what is a chronic progressive treatable brain disease. We also know that about 80 to 90% of individuals in active addiction are willing to seek help voluntarily if they are provided kind of a navigator to get them through that. And it's the right message and the right messenger. And then I also support civil commitment, which is involuntary treatment, but through the civil courts, not the criminal courts, for the 10 to 20% of folks who are unwilling. So maybe our views, they may or may not be as diametrically opposed as you might think.
Well, I hear where you're coming from, and I understand it, because, look, I know the statistics well also, whereas a person who seeks treatment, they may have to go to rehab 17 times before they even get clean. That doesn't even necessarily mean it's going to work, but for me, the law enforcement perspective comes from the people I've spoken to, the addiction recovery centers that I've spent some time working with. What many of the people have told me was they had to hit rock bottom. It had to involve some legal course of action because they were never going to change it themselves. In addition to that, a lot of people who have these drugs on them, especially since the Blake decision, what's happening is they're doing whatever it is to fuel their habit, whether it's theft, whether it's anything else going on in downtown Seattle. Mm-hmm. They do what it is to fuel the habit. So possession mm-hmm. could be an indication of something much, much bigger. I understand what you're saying, where we haven't found a perfect model for that yet, and it doesn't necessarily mean a person belongs in jail. But at the same time, mm-hmm. what's happening on the streets of Seattle and the broader King County and even Washington right now hasn't been working since the Blake decision.
Yeah, so a couple things that I'll mention that you said. So first, this concept of rock bottom. Actually, rock bottom is a very pervasive, but also very much a myth in this space. So it is absolutely true that there are some individuals that credit, you know, their incarceration or sort of a classic stereotypical rock bottom experience as the impetus for the recovery. But that's actually very much the minority narrative. And generally speaking, we don't legislate to the minority. It doesn't usually lend itself to good public policy. So for what we know is that the place from which recovery flows is actually hope. There is a quote that I love from someone who had done street outreach who said, "The barrier to my clients' engagement in treatment is not an absence of pain, it's an absence of hope." We know that actually to be diagnosed with substance use disorder, one of the criteria that you must meet is continued use despite negative consequences. And so the idea then that we would use increased penalties or negative consequences, that would result in behavior change, actually defies what we know about the disease of addiction. So that's kind of on the rock bottom piece. You mentioned, that things have been failing since the Blake decision. So,
well, to be fair, they were failing before the Blake decision, but yeah,
exactly. So there's a couple things that have happened since the Blake decision. Number one, the scourge of fentanyl, which had nothing to do with the Blake decision, and it had everything to do with the People's Republic of China actually shut down their fentanyl labs, and then they all got moved to Mexico. So there were things that, totally unrelated to what was happening in the state of Washington, but it happened around the same time. And so we have just a mass proliferation of fentanyl here now leading to overdose. And certainly the things that you discussed are very real, the property crime and such associated with untreated addiction. But one thing that I would offer is that the legislature's intended response in 5476, which was the 2021 legislation responding to Blake, was actually not to do nothing, although that's kind of the word on the street. We had $88.5 million of behavioral health investments in that bill. And while that is surely inadequate, over half of that was for a program called the Recovery Navigator Program, which was actually a statewide expansion of the wildly successful, wildly popular LEAD model, which is, the law enforcement assisted diversion.
Hang on a second. I got to push back on that for a second.
Okay, go ahead.
Because I have met with the people from LEAD, and when I met with the people from LEAD, they couldn't provide any evidence, any statistics, any data that the program was actually working. You know as well as I do that when you work with these agencies, when they have the numbers, they give you the numbers, and if not, they speak in platitudes. And the LEAD organization has never been able to give me any evidence that was new, that was recent, any data whatsoever showing that their solution actually worked. And then we see a whole bunch of these prolific offenders came out of the LEAD program. So you had me up until LEAD.
Sure. Yeah, no, that's so interesting because I actually have the data and I don't think I could probably find it on my laptop quick enough while we're on talking here, but I'd be happy to send it to you as a follow-up and maybe even encourage you if you're willing to have another conversation because I have some really good data out of their programs here. But I'll just say, the program has been expanded under this banner. It's called the Recovery Navigator Program, and we are just having just incredible success, both quantitatively and qualitatively. And what the program does, this Recovery Navigator program, ostensibly is it's a really intensive outreach, engagement, and intensive case management model. And again, we have data from our syringe service programs, which is a needle exchange, that upwards of 80% of folks using opioids, for instance, are interested in stopping or reducing their use. But trying to figure out how to do that in the course of active addiction is a tall order. And so what these programs do is build those bridges of trust and hope and bring people into care in the first place. And so you can capture about, roughly 4/5 of the population through those voluntary mechanisms, if you got the right messenger, which is primarily people staffing these programs or people in recovery themselves who, you know, were formerly homeless or formerly incarcerated. And the Recovery Navigator program, it expanded in every county of the state. King County was actually the last to implement, and most regions of the county, unfortunately, have not yet implemented. Only South King County has implemented. But it's working really well. It needs some more funding. But what's hard is that it is true that crime is up. It is true that there is public drug use, and it is true that there is fentanyl everywhere. And so looking at that set of facts, a lot of folks kind of have this knee-jerk reaction. Well, let's just recriminalize that. We'll fix things. But the reality is it's a really complex disorder with complex drivers. It's a complex societal problem, and the impacts are interwoven across systems. And so I guess in these conversations about how we should respond this year, I'm just really looking for that level of nuance and creativity and outside-the-box thinking. I would posit that simply returning to how things were before, which, as you conceded, was also ineffective, is probably not the right direction for drug policy in Washington.
I got to tell you, I wish we had 2 hours to do this. I really do, because I think we could learn a lot from each other. I'd love to see the data you're talking about. You got my contact information. I'd love to send you the data that I have also, because for me, and I just want to know, if it's working so well, why isn't it working? And if it's not working, what can we do to fix it? That's where I'm coming from with this.
Yeah, so you're talking about this Recovery Navigator program specifically, I assume?
I'm talking about everything, meaning we've spent so much money on all this stuff. We've spent billions of dollars on the problem happening on the streets. We've spent millions of dollars on recovery, on treatment, all these things. We talk about injection sites. We talk about needle exchanges, and it's not working. So if it's not working, how do we make it work? And if it's a failed model, how do we fix it? What's the best model? And I don't think it's just one lever. I think you have to pull a whole bunch of different stuff. But for me, I'm looking at the streets of Seattle, which I drive every single day, and I just know this isn't the city that I've been living in for 20 years, rather.
No, it's not, and nor the city that I grew up near either. So a couple things. I would just offer respectfully that we haven't actually spent billions or hardly millions on addressing the addiction problem. We have spent an incredible amount of money on housing, which is great, and certainly those two things are related, but I can just tell you, I came into the legislature in 2019. This is my fifth session, and my number one issue was investments for substance use disorder, and was basically able to get peanuts every year. So until the Blake decision happened, which basically created a policy window in which, you know, we could use that as kind of a political pressure to actually secure more funds. And that's when we got $88.5 million, which was the single largest state investment in substance use disorder in state history. So, and prior to that, I mean, we're talking, you know, less than probably $5 million of new investments. So it's actually been very little to address addiction specifically. And so I would say that the Recovery Navigator program that I talked about, the primary issue there is that we were trying to stand up a new program statewide. And, you know, unfortunately, the wheels of bureaucracy turned slowly, and moving $45 million out, you know, it went out to these 10 behavioral health administrative regions around the state. And then they had to, in turn, find contractors and hire staff. And so it just took a really long time. So that program didn't start in earnest until Q3, Q4 of last year in many jurisdictions. And so it is working really well, but it's brand new. And so people haven't really seen the fruits of it. They're still working on developing those partnerships with law enforcement. It was also underfunded. And by no means is that Recovery Navigator program a panacea of sorts. But to your point, we need multiple levers. I do find, and the data does suggest, that that program is remarkably effective for the 4/5 of the willing. And then for the 1 in 5 or so who aren't willing, I would offer that a different piece of legislation that we passed, House Bill 1773. It was a Representative Taylor bill that was honestly, it passed without much fanfare, but it was a significant expansion of the state civil commitment or involuntary treatment laws for both mental health and addiction. And it lowered the bar significantly, so that many of the folks that you're talking about, that you're seeing in the streets of Seattle, would actually qualify. And though that law went into effect July of last year, no jurisdiction has implemented that bill. And the bill refers to something called assisted outpatient treatment or involuntary outpatient. So I do feel like we have some existing programs like Recovery Navigator and assisted outpatient, but the issue is underfunding and implementation issues that we need to work on. And then I would also say that I would concede that we do need to address this issue of public use. That's incredibly problematic, and I do support doing, I'm not exactly sure what the proper response is, but we've got to do something to crack down on public drug use, obviously.
We're going to have to leave it there because my custom on the show is always to give our guests the very last word, and I appreciate you coming on the show, Representative Lauren Davis from the 32nd Legislative District of Washington. Thank you very much for being willing to have the conversation with me on this, and I look forward to doing so in the future.
Anytime, Ari. Thanks so much.
Well, I know we're really excited to see Ant-Man Quantumania, which is coming out in a week or two, and then Titanic is being released this week. So, until then, I'm looking at some streaming movies that I've been checking out, and the most recent one, because it's award season, is Blonde. Now, this is the one about Marilyn Monroe, and I'll say this for this movie. It deserves the Razzies it's been nominated for. Now, Ana de Armas, awesome in the role, great in the role. The problem is none of it's true. Or at least what I can find online, very little of it is true. So whatever they put into this role about Marilyn Monroe, I'm one of those guys who after I see a movie, if I enjoy the movie or if I really hate the movie, I go start looking up the IMDb, I look up the Wikipedia, I look up the production, I do all that. I could find nothing historically to back this up. Couldn't at all. Now, this may all well have happened and they may be pulling it from some other source material, but I couldn't find anything at all on the stuff that I saw. I will admit, I shut the movie off at the 30-minute mark, maybe the 40-minute mark, because it was so abysmal. If you're expecting a Hollywood period piece, it's not that at all. In fact, I would say that in so many scenes, they cheaped out on the Hollywood-esqueness of this. It felt like there was no scenery. It felt like there were no backgrounds. It felt like they were doing a play on stage at a community college where they're trying to save money on set design. Now, Ana de Armas stands out. She was amazing. She was incredible. But this movie is graphic. Really graphic. So graphic that if I was watching this on a plane, I would turn it off because I don't want the people who are going to the bathroom up the aisle wondering what I'm watching. It's that graphic.
Well, and that was going to be one of the questions I was going to ask, because there was a lot of to-do and hoopla around this quote-unquote NC-17 rating that this movie carries. Now, granted, it's a Netflix movie, so ratings don't even matter. I don't even understand why Netflix bothers submitting movies to the MPAA, because it's not like it's a movie that's a real movie. Netflix movies are TV movies. You can at me at Mike on KVI. Fight me. The Irishman was the best TV movie of 2020.
And I still fall asleep during it. Twice or three times. It was so damn long.
Exactly. I'm just saying it's a TV movie. At the end of the day, there is a tangible difference between Netflix movies and real movies. But I'm tangenting from the point, getting distracted. My question having to do with the ratings, because, like, you know, being a red-blooded American fella, I see NC-17 and Ana de Armas, who I really enjoyed in that James Bond movie. I'm like, woo, there's going to be something there for me. But I think I'm understanding that that's not necessarily the case.
It's not that at all. It's... How do I say this with you have children in the car right now? I'm trying to figure out how to say this.
We got tread lightly for an NC-17
movie. It's stuff that doesn't make you go, woo. It's stuff that makes you go, that's flippin' awful. Did she actually suffer that in her life?
Yeah.
It's that kind of stuff. It's horrendous. And it's too bad because Ana de Armas is completely wasted in this movie. And it actually shows she has incredible acting chops. And by the way, we always knew she did. She was one of the best parts of that James Bond movie. That James Bond movie was not that great, but she was fantastic in it. And if they said they were making a spinoff with her, both of us said if she's going to be the new 007, we will watch it.
Gladly.
See, us here on the Ari Hoffman Show, we support women's rights. We support feminism. We want Ana de Armas to be the next 007, but unfortunately that's not what they're going to do.
Well, and it's fascinating too with this, so she has the Oscar nomination for Best Actress.
Mm-hmm.
Conversely though, in all of the other made-up categories that the Razzies have, Blonde has been nominated in all of those. So is there that much of a divide between how good her performance is and how bad the rest of the movie is?
Yes, but the acting in this movie is actually really good. Everybody's acting in the movie is very, very good. But the movie itself was badly written. The script is terrible. What if I was making this movie, what I would have done is it would have been Marilyn in her prime, and different things trigger her to flash back to whatever happened in her past. But that's not what they did. It kind of skips all over the place with no rhyme or reason and just left me confused. And like I said, maybe it gets better, but I shut this sucker off at the 30-minute mark.
I have a solution. So Marilyn Monroe gets in the Bacta tank. And while she's in the Bacta tank, she has dreamy flashbacks of her time with the Tusken Raiders.
Put it this way. You know how much I dislike the Book of Boba Fett? That was better than this. That's all I'm going to say. But before I forget, it's your chance to win fantabulous prizes. Today, we are giving away 4 tickets to Fear in Theaters, rated R, sponsored by Lando Carriage. In the psychological horror film, a group of friends gathers for a much-needed weekend getaway after a year of living through a worldwide pandemic. Wait a minute, what? What was supposed to be a needed getaway and celebratory weekend in the remote Tahoe Mountains quickly turns into a waking nightmare. As the truth about the historic lodge slowly unravels in front of them, this group of friends will be pushed to the brink of survival. Celebration turns into terror as one by one, each guest faces their own worst fear. There's a lot of insanity going on in Olympia. Actually, I'll be headed to Olympia on Wednesday to address the Republican caucus. Very excited about that. Never done that before. I'm actually honored and flattered. They asked me to come down there. I'll try and get some video of it so I can share it with you on the show. But to talk about the latest insanity that's going on down there, joining us now on the KVI studio line from Washington's 6th Legislative District, Representative Mike Volks. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Well, thanks for having me. Happy Monday.
Happy Monday to you as well, and I appreciate you being with us. So tell me, this is something that has gotten my goat, I guess, for a long time, you might say, is the fact that all the time, the legislature, or other municipalities for that matter, will just pass something, assume that everybody's going to okay it, and then at some point kind of go back for permission. So on the ballot, it says, well, the legislator passed without approval of the people, a tax on you. Is that literally taxation without representation?
Well, it's a tax increase. We are, we're elected to represent our various districts. But years ago, the people of Washington State, in their wisdom, decided that they would pass an initiative that said, "Hey, we want a say in that through the advisory vote process." So we get a vote on taxes, and we get a vote up or down, and generally we reject them across Washington State. And so the problem is, over the years, those our views and our opinions get ignored by the process. And so now there's a move afoot to get rid of the advisory votes on the ballot. So I dropped an initiative or a bill, a House joint resolution, to create a constitutional amendment that not only are those advisory votes, but they should be an automatic referendum of the people that would kick it back to the appropriate House, and that they would have to take action. So the intent is to strengthen the voice of the people, not weaken it, not to get rid of it, and to honor the views of our citizens.
We're talking with Representative Mike Volks from Washington's 6th Legislative District, which includes Western Spokane County, including areas like Airway Heights, Medical Lake, and Cheney, etc. And we're looking at something practical, something common sense, something that you would assume most people would be on board with. How do your Democrat colleagues feel about this legislation?
Well, since they're pushing to get rid of the advisory vote, there's no scheduled hearing on this. I assume they don't like it.
Gotcha. So they really don't want this to happen. So I guess with Republicans in the minority, with the Democrats in the majority, where does it go from here?
Well, you know, what helps is give them a call, tell them you want at least a hearing for it. I'm working on that. You know, we'll continue to work to at least get a hearing in committee so we can talk about it, which I think is fair and reasonable. Since they're hearing the bill to get rid of the advisory vote, I think it would be reasonable to expect that they hear a mind to strengthen the voice of the people.
I got to tell you, I'm just getting more and more frustrated with the Democrats in the legislature. They're clearly enjoying one-party rule. They clearly don't care what's good for Washingtonians, because they're forging ahead with these things, thinking these dummy heads are just going to vote us back into power anyway. And it seems to me like they keep coming up with these terrible ideas. What can the Republicans do to push back on some of this?
Well, you know, it helps to call. I mean, call your legislator, call the your representatives and your senators and stuff, because that really does help send emails you know, just express your opinions, tell them what you think, and then stay engaged in the process and work through the, you know, work through the election process. We're motivated, even though we're in a minority. Our caucus is motivated, and we're going to come and do the best we can to fight these horrible bills. You know, our job here in the minority is to number one, kill bad bills, stop them, and number two, if we can't, we try to make them better and less harmful. So that's our job, and it really helps to hear from folks on what everybody thinks about what we're doing and how things are going.
In the last few minutes we have with Representative Mike Volz, this isn't the only thing you're working on, of course. Of course, there's many other things you're working on. A lot of Washingtonians don't have faith in our electoral process. So tell me what you're doing to fix that.
Yeah, well, I dropped a bill, and we know we can check to see if our ballots are received by the election office. But I dropped a bill that puts a unique 16-digit code on a little tear-off thing attached to your actual physical ballot, that within 30 days after the election, you can go online, you can enter this code that you and only you know to look at your ballot to see if your ballot was actually the one that you submitted and got counted. So it's absolute transparency and absolute accountability in the election process. Now, just so we're clear, this code is not associated with your name, your address, any of your information. It's only associated with the image of your individual ballot, and you'd know if it's yours or not.
Representative Mike Volz from Washington's 6th Legislative District, which includes Western Spokane County, Airway Heights, Medical Lake, Cheney, places all along that area. Thank you so much for joining us today. We really do appreciate it.
Yep, my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Look forward to seeing you later this week in Olympia. Love to have you anytime. It is time to feel good as we wrap up another amazing episode of the Ari Hoffman Show right here on Talk Radio 570 KVI. And before we get to our good news giveaway, before we get to our good news headlines, here's just a few programming notes for you. This is good news for me, and I actually want to share it with everybody. On Wednesday, I'll be heading down to Olympia to address the Republican caucus in the Washington State Legislature. Number one, never spoken in a legislature before. Number two, I'm just flattered they actually asked me to go. It really means a lot, especially given the fact, just from a personal thing, they're asking me to talk about anti-Semitism and people using the word Nazi the wrong way and things like that. And I just got to say, you know, my grandfather, he wasn't allowed to do certain things in his life because of his background, because of his religion. And it's just a huge deal. I wish he was alive to see his grandson standing in, you know, the Washington State Legislature and talking about this kind of stuff. So it's just kind of sentimental to me. It really means a lot. And I'm really, really flattered that they asked. Also, good news is that tomorrow, you just get me in the afternoon. All of you who are fans of John Carlson, he'll be back tomorrow. So you don't have to have the really loud guy in the morning when you're trying to wake up from a hangover. Anywho, some good news for you. This one I'm confused by. Maybe Mike can help me out with it. So there's a lawsuit involving Fireball whiskey.
Okay.
And I'm very confused by all this. Of course, I did see some girl who looked like she was doing the walk of shame where she smells it and she smells a candle and she goes, oh, it smells like Fireball. And her friend goes, no, that's cinnamon. Right? See? Oh, wait, did I do that? Oh,
man.
No.
Oh,
yes,
no.
I did.
No,
well, what's this lawsuit?
No.
Thank you. A little late, but thank you. Nice. What's this lawsuit about? Fireball drinkers were duped when they picked up a bottle of Fireball cinnamon at convenience stores, gas stations, and supermarkets around the country, according to a lawsuit in Illinois. The bottles don't contain any whiskey. Well, then what the hell am I getting drunk on? Or is this like the Adam Sandler CD where it's like, I'm so drunk, dude, I'm so drunk? Yeah, there's nothing in that.
It's syrup is what it is. That's all it is. It is cinnamon-flavored sugar syrup.
So what are you getting so buzzed on?
It's still chock full of alcohol.
Oh, so then what are they complaining about? There's no whiskey in it?
It's not whiskey.
Oh, God, give me a break.
Okay, so being a Scotch guy,
yes,
as you are,
yes,
for a whiskey to be... Okay, so I use the...
Whiskey's American, yes.
Yeah, yeah, so yeah. So I use the Shannon O'Donnell relate there where it's like, you know, all bourbons are whiskey, but not all whiskeys are bourbons.
Correct.
Same thing with Scotch.
Yes.
Scotch whiskey is something very specific under specific circumstances and all of that other stuff. Much like bourbon, just like Irish whiskey or whatever. Fireball, on the other hand, is not whiskey in any kind of way. It's just candy juice for young people.
Right, but I mean,
and country music fans.
When you buy that garbage, you know what you're getting. Chemical number 7 yes. and chemical number 12. The fact that people are suing over this, really? I mean, are these the kind of people who go, you spell whiskey without an E, you ignorant bastards. Ah. Like, is it that guy? I mean, really, are these the people who are upset about this?
Yes.
I've got tons of Fireball
dumb
in my
dumbs.
House. Right. Do I ever look at the ingredients on Fireball? The only reason I may have done that in my youth was to go, can I light this on fire or not? That really may have been the only reason. This is stupid.
Ironically enough, probably not because it's so sugary.
Right, probably not. You're 100% right. I think the last thing you could light, it's like, what is it? Everclear. Everclear
oh, sure.
you could light on fire.
Absolutely.
There used to be a drink called a Polish butterfly. We were uh-huh. really big on in Israel because we were stupid.
Uh-huh.
So here's what it is. It's pretty much Everclear and Blue Curacao.
Ooh.
And then you light Whoa. That sucker. It's awful. You light that sucker on fire and then you drink it.
My tummy is turning just thinking of that. My goodness.
The night I had 4 was quite not memorable. Anyway, I'll discuss my wayward youth another time. Oh, dear God. Anyway, now's your chance to win fantabulous prizes. Today, we're giving away a $50 Daniel's Broiler gift card. Daniel's Broiler has been a Seattle favorite since 1980. Features USDA Prime Steak and other specialties, including chicken and fresh seafood, as well as a selection of high-end spirits, wine, and cocktails. Daniel's Broiler is open now in Bellevue, downtown Seattle, Leschi, and South Lake Union with dine and takeout on delivery. Check out danielsbroiler.com to reserve a table, place your takeout delivery order, and more. We are also giving away a copy of 7 Steps to a Successful Retirement from Madrona Financial Services. Learn how to design your retirement to support your quality of life from 30 plus years from Brian Evans and Madrona Financial and CPAs, a local company. We're going to help you grow deep financial roots of future financial storms. Don't blow your life savings away. Visit MadronaFinancial.com for more information and discover how you can create a rooted wealth plan today. Last but certainly not least, here we go. It's the big one. We are giving away two tickets to Dr. Jordan B. Peterson at Angel of the Winds Arena in Everett on Sunday, February 19th. Sponsored by Live Nation Entertainment, Jordan B. Peterson has taught mythology to lawyers, doctors, and business people, consulted for the UN Secretary General, helped his clinical clients manage depression, obsessive compulsive disorder, anxiety, schizophrenia, served as an advisor to senior partners of major Canadian law firms, and lectured extensively in North America and Europe. With his students and colleagues at Harvard and University of Toronto, Dr. Peterson has published over 100 scientific papers, transforming modern understanding of personality. Tickets to Beyond Order, 12 More Rules for Life Tour are on sale now at Ticketmaster.com. That is a hell of a prize, I gotta say.